This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Thank you, Shannon. Later this hour, Dr. Kirk Heinze will talk with Michigan Office of the Great Lakes Director John Allen.
It's a big part of our culture. It's a big part of our heritage. It's also a big part of our economy. And it's really a big part of the environment that makes us well and healthy and sustains us. So all those pieces are really critical elements of what water plays in the Great Lakes region and in Michigan.
Up first, here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and MSU Alumni Association Executive Director Scott Westerman with Big Ten and Rose Bowl champion Spartan football players Travis Jackson and Mike Sadler.
Really a pleasure to welcome Scott Westerman as my co-host today. So thank you, Scott, for being a part of this. They brought in the A team since you did this as both a student and as a professional for a while. So we've got a professional now instead of Mark.
Well, you know, I always love having the opportunity to put my comm arts degree to some real use.
And so we're really fortunate to have with us two members of the football team, Travis Jackson and Mike Sadler. And so, wasn't the Rose Bowl terrific?
That was special. That was just a special time, something that you dream of as a kid, and just to be able to live out that dream was just truly remarkable.
So, Travis, what was the thing that you remember the most about it?
It was an absolutely chance of a lifetime, unbelievable chance of a lifetime. And the one thing that I remember taking back from it was just how much Spartan Nation came out to support us. I think that place was loud as I've ever heard any stadium. We looked around and 3/4 of it was green. And I remember in that fourth quarter when it got dark and our fans got behind us. And it was just truly a special moment that I'll never forget.
What was a turning point for you in the game, do you think?
I believe halftime. We went into halftime knowing that we didn't play as well as we needed to. We were making mistakes. We didn't come out as amped up as we wanted to. And we knew that since we hadn't played our best and we were still in a pretty good situation that we needed to take control. And, you know, we have great leaders on our team. That senior class is a group of special people. So we kind of just rallied around them, and we went out there and just tried to take it in the second half. And I got to give credit to all the coaches, all the players. It was just truly a special year.
Well, you've been a believer since before the season started. I remember you were one of the first guys to raise your hand and say, this is the year. What was it about the team that gave you that confidence?
It's the seniors. You have great leaders from multiple recruiting classes, too. We had some guys from my class, the class above us, I think even the class two above due to some medical red shirts. So it was just absolutely a magnificent group of guys. And when you have leaders, it's so important. Coach D'Antonio always stresses the seniors being leaders. And this was the best group of leaders we've had.
So now it's going to be your turn.
Yes, yes. It's absolutely unbelievable. Just, I can't believe it. We're growing up so fast. But I'm really just enjoying this, and we're going to make the most of it this year, too.
Mike, what kind of dancer is President Simon?
She's a great dancer. She has more moves than I do. Whenever we have that circle in the post-game locker room, I'm always as far away from it as possible. That's one of my worst fears, is getting dragged in there. But she had the courage.
As it was mine.
but you had the courage, and I don't know. There's a couple 100,000 hits on YouTube with it, so more power to you, but I could never do that.
It was raised. I did the economic club, and it was raised in part of my introduction to the economic club. Fortunately, they didn't show the video, so I was at least spared that moment. It was interesting to be. You know, I've been in winning locker rooms with you guys, and I've been in losing locker rooms with you guys, and this sort of tradition of the dance is an interesting piece about how it will continue next year, whether it become, you know, a regular part of Spartan tradition. So I was able to avoid it in Indianapolis, and so I was standing back. I was standing back with Mark Hollis, who I thought was a trusted friend in this regard.
So that's why he's not here today.
No, it could well be because he didn't want to talk about this part of it. A trusted friend, and so all of a sudden, Coach D comes back, and I think he just wants to talk. And he says, "This is your time." And for a moment, I didn't understand what it meant. And all of a sudden, he walks in front of me. Hollis grabs my arm, and people start parting. You know, when Coach went through, and there you are. And so you're sort of in the moment, as you would say. So when I came back, and I should have known about YouTube and stuff. I'm sort of out of a different generation. So I came back. The first event after the Rose Bowl was a faculty reception. So this faculty member comes up to me, and he said, "I saw the video." And I thought, here it comes. And he said, "You know, for that dance, you looked presidential." And I figured that was about the best I was going to be able to do about it. So, which meant I wasn't very good, I think.
Right,
but, but it was a good thing. But it's a great experience. So next year, you guys are going to have to be in the center, right?
We'll see. We'll see. I might still try to pull a few strings so I can stay on the outer rim of it. But we do have a lot of kids that like to get in there and dance, and I'm just going to let them have the spotlight.
So I want to talk with you a bit, Mike. One of my experiences about being on the sidelines sort of before the game is you don't seem to have a lot to do.
Yeah.
You're one of the guys I can talk to because you're just sort of in the moment. You're talking to recruits. You're sort of very relaxed, where Travis and these guys had to be out there doing all this stuff.
Sure. Well, it is a little bit different for a kicker, punter, or snapper in the sense that we get out there about 70 minutes before the game, and we're warmed up in about 15, 20 minutes, and at that point, everybody else is starting to come out there. So we're off the field, ready to go. So we have about 40, 50 minutes to kill. So, we like to go over to the sideline, sit down a little bit, talk to the recruits, talk to the coaches, anybody that's over there, just to make the time go by a little bit faster. And even during the game, we're a little bit different than everybody else in the sense that we're not necessarily paying close attention to the game because we don't want to ride that emotional roller coaster. As kickers, you always want to be in the same frame of mind every time you go out there. So you're always just a little bit different kind of, you know, maybe this is why I'm always on the outside of the dance. It's just because I never want to be right in the middle of everything. But it's worked for me so far, so hopefully it'll carry over next year.
Yeah, Mike does a great job of looking good on the sidelines.
He does, doesn't he?
And
yeah.
I think he needs to, you know, get a little more recognition for that.
it's sort of hard to pick him out because he sometimes gets lost among all of you who are a bit bigger. But I notice that Coach D'Antonio isn't going to put a cell phone pocket in his jersey so he could tweet while he's just hanging around, right?
I know. He wouldn't be a fan of that. I think the closest I get is I have a hand warmer that straps around your waist. And you know, normally you can stick some candy or sandwiches in that. Yeah. So that's about all that I've been able to do so far. But cell phone's a little bit too much.
You're an avid – you have a lot of following, I understand, in social media.
Yeah, I do. I think – Twitter especially is a very good tool to kind of let the fans get to know you. And as long as you use it properly, as long as you're mature about it and can kind of enhance your brand as well as the school's brand, the football team's brand, that it can be a great tool. Unfortunately, typically social media and athletes don't really go together. You see a lot of people that can't use it responsibly, but I'm very fortunate that we have the people here at Michigan State to kind of guide me and make sure that I'm using it the right way.
Those of your fans that are listening today, of course, will know something more about this topic than President Simon and I do. But tell the story of how the 17 magazine recognition came about.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Well,
yes.
I was just out of practice one day, and I come in, and my phone's blown up, and there's just all these links to this 17 magazine story. And apparently they rated the top 25 hottest players in college football. I have no idea how I made that list. I must have some...
Travis doesn't either, but...
I actually think he should have been number one. I want to go on record.
Okay.
But
he's got another year to go, doesn't he?
I do.
Yeah, I
do.
I know. So I guess it was just a maybe I'll seniority
need to,
thing.
I might need to go down to the Aveda Institute and see what they can do with my hair and... I don't know. We'll see. But I came back, and sure enough, the next day there were probably a couple hundred pictures just scattered throughout the locker room, weight room, training room. They were just everywhere. So everyone let me hear it. And, we like to have fun with the little things when we can, and they certainly had their fun with that one.
Well, Travis, you had your social media moment. It's hard to upstage Coach D, but that's exactly what you did at the Ohio State basketball game. What possessed you to go out and do that dance at that moment?
Coach D actually asked me to do it, so the yes chant is kind of a WWE thing by the guy named Daniel Bryan. So one day, me and my friend were watching it, and he was doing it. I was like, that's an awesome thing. I'm going to do that. So I did it during the Michigan game. It kind of just blew up. Coach D came to me before the Ohio State game, and he's like, I want to see this thing done right. And so I was like, oh, man, I'm so nervous. So many people there.
Was that harder than snapping the ball to Connor Cook with the chant?
I mean, it was really cool having that many people do the chant with you. And so it was a really special moment. And, Coach D wanted to see it done right. I think Spartan Nation showed him how it was done.
Now, we probably should clarify that blowing up is in a technological world means you get all this attention. It's a good thing.
It is a good thing
for those listeners who are a little bit older, like me, and sort of aren't into the language. So as you think about and reflect, what made you come to Michigan State? As you look back on it now, you've been here a while. You've had a chance to think about it.
Well, for me, I was fortunate. Typically, punters don't receive many scholarship offers coming out of high school, but I was an odd case, and I had lots of scholarship offers, and I was fortunate to be able to really attend any school in the country that I wanted to, and a lot of those were the football powerhouses like Alabama, LSU, USC, those kind of schools that are just traditionally known for their football. But what drew me to MSU was just the family-like atmosphere. Just Coach D'Antonio and his staff really, really make you feel welcome here. They care about you on the field, but more so they care about you off the field, and they care about you as a person. They want to see you grow. You come in as a boy, and they want you to leave a man. And that's held true to this day. And I've never had any second thoughts about coming here. I know I made the right decision, and it's in large part due to Coach D'Antonio and his staff.
And now with this extraordinary set of records, we're a football powerhouse too.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. He always has a way of recruiting the kids that are kind of come in and work a little bit harder than the other people. And when you bring in people with good character, they're going to leave, having built a special place. And I think that we've restored MSU football to what it should be, and we're hoping that it'll continue on into the future.
Travis?
I mean, I'm going to second a lot of what Mike said. I remember sitting in Coach D'Antonio's office and talking to him, and he told me that he doesn't only recruit players, but he recruits people. That was very important to me. I had a lot of offers, too, mainly around the Midwest, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Boston College was another place I was looking at. And I just remember sitting in Coach D's office and just really liking what he had to say about the program. He also is just a man of great faith. He allows you to express yourself in the ways that you want to. And like he said, it's just so family oriented. And I can tell you that I know a lot of guys that go to different schools, and the locker room that we have, the people in the locker room that we have, it's a special group of people. And it's been such an awesome experience being here.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're listening to a conversation between Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and MSU Alumni Association Executive Director Scott Westerman with Spartan football players Mike Sadler and Travis Jackson.
One of the things that, in listening to the recruiting spiel, you both have heard it, the words are often the same.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to win championships. I mean, the list goes on and on. One of the things that I think from your comments, and I would say from my own experience with Coach D or with Coach Izzo, is the word genuine. I mean, when he says something, he really means
authenticity.
And it's really because the words, you might have heard them other places, but it's a sense of feeling that comes from the locker room, from the leadership, that I think sets Coach D and Coach Izzo apart. And then you have, for all of the jokes about Coach Manning, he does feel passionately about kids as well. You just have to make it a little difficult for you in the morning.
Oh, yeah. And that's something that you really realize over time is how authentic they are and how genuine they are. like you said, everyone has the same spiel during recruiting, and once you develop the relationships and actually get to know people, it's pretty easy to see who is genuine and who isn't. And you know, I can't praise Coach D and his staff enough for the kind of people they are and how they treat us and how they want to see us develop and grow.
It's really a special community here too. Just how the teams come together, the coaches come together, from Coach Izzo, Coach Anastas, Coach Boss. It's just kind of all the coaches are kind of a community too, and all the athletes are kind of a community. I think that's one thing that President Simon has done a great job of. She comes and addresses us before every season, and having the support of your president, having the support of the coaches, the community around you, it's what's being part of Spartan Nation's all about. It's such a special opportunity to be here, and it's been such a cool time to be here too.
Well, this season was full of excitement and the unexpected for you. You ended up snapping the ball to a different quarterback than you started out the season with, and on the very last game, one of our key players wasn't playing. How does a team deal with the unexpected?
I think a huge part of that is camaraderie. We struggled in the beginning of the season. Not necessarily because we didn't have the talent, even necessarily having the camaraderie off the field, but on the field, we just weren't gelling much as an offense. And I remember after the Notre Dame game, you know, everyone's really disappointed to lose to a rival like that. But we had a bye after that week. And we kind of came together and said, you know, we got to do this thing because the start of the Big Ten season was coming around. And it was Iowa, I believe, that we played. And I remember coming together and our offense playing really well in that game. Connor Cook had a fantastic game. And I remember that being the moment, like, we can do this. And it's so special of a coaching staff. I think it really reflects on the coaching staff to have such a struggle in the first couple games and have them stick behind you as players, as people. And that just gave our team the boost that we needed. So it was kind of a tale of two seasons between our non-conference schedule and our conference schedule. And it just seemed like we got better and better every week. And it was just it just speaks to our coaches.
Mike Sadler, you're just coming off knee surgery. And that was something that was a factor for you during the season. How do you play through the pain?
Well, first off, our athletic training staff does a great job of taking care of you, you know, whether it's treatments throughout the week, just making sure that you're as comfortable as you can be. But, you know, football's a game where everyone's going to be playing through some kind of injury, and you know, hopefully punters don't have too many injuries, but every once in a while something will flare up. So the knee was bugging me a little bit during the year. Fortunately, it's going to be good to go next season, but everyone plays through injuries, and that's just something that's a part of the game.
And no one knew.
No one knew.
I didn't know that until now.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good. I know the media kind of saw me hobbling off the field a little bit during the end of the season. But, yeah. You know, fortunately.
That was because you got hit.
Yeah, I did get hit a couple times. But it's always worth it anytime I can run a fake. If I'm getting hit, then I either ran a fake or there's going to be a penalty flag thrown.
He's,
so
he's pretty tough, contrary to popular belief about punters.
So that's may rise. He may be able to rise in the ratings if we just get it out a bit more in terms of the sort of the macho part of Mike Sadler.
Yeah, right? I think we really need to market the macho part of Mike Sadler. You know, he gets put in 17 magazine. He's a punter. You know, odds are against him, but as you can see, looks great today.
After football, he's got a career with Speedo, I think. Oh, yeah. You end up giving Narduzzi one of those swimsuits from California.
You know, I brought it with me to the Rose Bowl, you know, hoping that we'd win, and in the locker room afterwards he had a big bunch of media around him, so I threw the Speedo on him. He wasn't real happy about that, so haven't really brought it up since then. It might be a little bit of a sore subject for him.
Well, you know, we talk a lot about the athletic side of the business, but one of the big challenges that you both face as student athletes is the academic side. How is it that you can work so hard on you know, a great performance on the field and be able to balance that with great performance in the classroom, Travis?
I think we got to look at the staff over at the Clara Bill Smith Center. Those people over there are top notch. We have academic advisors walking us through everything, scheduling our classes, getting us tutors when we need them. That's truly another special part of being at MSU is being part of that community, the academic side of things. Again, like I said, being part of Spartan Nation involves the professors too. All you have to do is reach out to professors and they'll work with you and they'll do things for you, for any student on campus that, they'll outreach to you and it's just great. So it's definitely tough balancing your time. But we have a great staff. I've had awesome professors all throughout my career here, so it's worked out really well.
Well, and Mike, in your situation, you're in grad school. It mm-hmm. doesn't get easier; it gets tougher. How do you think that'll work for you in your academic postgraduate, undergraduate experience?
It definitely is a little bit tougher. It is tougher, and it's harder to balance. A lot of my classes are at night, so that takes a little bit of getting used to, but kind of echoing what Travis said, it's with the staff that we have in place here, it's hard to fail. It's hard to fail, and as long as you're a motivated kid, and we don't have any problem with that, with the with the kind of kids we recruit, with their character, they're always motivated. They want to do well on and off the field. Really, academics isn't as bad as you'd think. Like I said, as long as you are willing to work hard and put forth a solid effort, then there's really no way you can fail, no matter what level you're at.
So let me sort of, let's say we're having this conversation 10 years from now,
mm-hmm.
and you'll have a very successful senior season, and people will talk about you as leaders in the same way you're talking about the senior class. But 10 years from now, what do you want to be doing?
That's a good question. honestly, it's with football, it is tough for us to figure out what we want to do afterwards. I think everyone on the team has an NFL dream. You are not yeah. playing football at this level if you don't want to continue. But with football, you're always just one play away from having everything taken from you.
Yeah.
So we do understand the importance of our education and getting a meaningful degree and something that we enjoy doing that can impact society in a positive way. So if we're not doing football in the future, then hopefully we are using our Michigan State degree to better lives across the world and do something that we love in the process.
I'm going to be living in Mike Sadler's basement. I'm just kidding.
He's going to be a punter, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be a punter.
No.
Or he's going to be a TV announcer based on his...
Yeah, whatever he's doing, I'm there.
Okay.
I major in psychology. I enjoy working with people. I love the study of the mind. So I definitely want to further my degree in psychology. And definitely work with people and just interact with people all the time. And just I believe that's really what's important and what we've also gotten to do here. It's the impact that you have on people that really lasts, that lasts after you're gone here. So that's what I'm really looking forward to do.
So let me sort of shift back the other way for a moment. And what advice would you give parents about who have young men, sons who may be interested in playing football? What would you say to them?
I think that you need to remember that it's a game. You need to keep things in perspective. And, in our society, where, athletes are treated as celebrities and, they're making millions of dollars a year, you kind of forget that it's a game and there are lots of more important things out there. You pay attention to your education. You have to do well there because, like I said, football is going to end one day and you need something to fall back on. And, your education is always going to be there. You're always going to have your mind with you. So understand that football is a game, but there are more important things out there like your education, like your family, like your friends, all the relationships that you'll build along the way. So just keep things in perspective. Football is a great game. It teaches you lots of things, but at the end of the day, it is just a game.
I would say just love them, support them, be behind them all the time. My parents did an absolutely great job. If I had my worst game ever, I remember my mom come up to me, "You played so great." And I'd be like, "No, I didn't, Mom." But, it always was a huge thing that my parents were always there to back me. I think it's so important that to remember it's a game. Sports are just an awesome, awesome gift. And I just think if you take it too far and get too caught up into it and becomes who you are, like you said, you can lose it on any play, then you lose kind of your identity. So I would just say, you know, remember sport's a game, enjoy it, work as hard as you can, and for the parents, just love them, support them, back them up.
What do you think makes a really good teammate? I mean, we've talked about family and you know, the sort of generic. If you were to say two or three traits that you really value in your teammates, make them really good teammates or really good leaders, what would it be?
I think this is a hard one to really put into a couple words. I think the ideal teammate would be a Spartan. If you watch the movie 300, that might be a little graphic for some of our younger viewers, but the Spartans always protect the person next to them. So I think if you had to put it in a couple words, it'd be trust, loyalty, and maybe responsibility or commitment to those previous two things. You have to be able to trust the person next to you, and they always have to have your back, and Spartans do.
I have, you know, a very interesting perspective on this, playing on the offensive line. I play with four other guys that you're trusting, counting on, and we've had some great leaders come in, from Joel Foreman to senior year this year, Blake Treadwell. And, you know, I'd say toughness is huge, especially up front. Those guys are willing not only to be tough in the game, but be tough on their guys in practice, tough on their peers when they're not performing well. I say hard work is killer. They're always the one going in there, doing the extra work. So you see them do it, you want to do it. I think that's a huge thing. And then loyalty is just absolutely huge. You know, they never go back on that toughness or their hard work. They're always doing it for the person next to them.
We talked about the academic part of the stool, and then we also talked about the athletic part of the stool. But then there's that growing up piece that you were talking about, mm-hmm. Mike Sadler. You said learning how to be a man. How do you do that in a place where everybody's worshiping you as a god?
You know, the whole growth thing is kind of interesting. And the older you get, the more perspective you have on it. When you come into college, you think that you have everything figured out. You know, you're usually the big man on campus at your high school. You come in here and you think you really know everything. But the more you grow, and growth in football is done by waking up early and going to work with Coach Manny. You know, being at meetings on times and on time and being dependable on and off the field. So with time you grow, and it's kind of funny because by the time you leave here, you almost know less and less than you think you did, just as you begin to realize that the world's such a big place and there's so many things out there. So it's a funny thing. It's a funny thing because you can grow and you can mature, but at the same time you just feel like you know less and less as your eyes are opened more and more.
Well, Travis, you know, there's also the temptation. There's a lot of kids doing a lot of crazy things around here. How do you stay away from that stuff?
Oh, I mean, you know, I've always talked about this. There's a college experience, and people always say, well, you don't get to experience college. But, you know, athletes have a different college experience. And I think if you talk to any athlete, they wouldn't want to trade that for anything in the world. So, you know, they have the whole party going out experience. We have, you know, traveling to awesome stadiums and playing in them, competing against the best in the country. So, you know, that's motivation enough. And like I said before, just doing it for your teammates, knowing that you're accountable not only for yourself but for the guys next to you. That's a motivation enough.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Yeah, this is
great way to represent Michigan State University.
Yeah. Well, you guys have said so many sound bites here. I can see Russ he's got a big smile.
Yeah, and you know what I've been saying to folks, and because the Rose Bowl, until you get there, the setting, all of the stuff that goes with it. Yeah, you guys have been to bowl games before,
yes.
But it is special.
Very special.
And so I guess what we want for all Spartans, for you in the classroom, and is just to continue to have those Rose Bowl-like experiences, mm-hmm. that are so awesome, that put both, you know, are celebrate being a Spartan, but also put life in perspective.
Yeah, no doubt. I think if this has taught me anything, it's at the risk of sounding a little cliche, you got to stop and smell the roses every once in a while and enjoy the little things. And, you know, that was taught to me by the Rose Bowl, so go figure. But it has been fun to enjoy the little things along the way. And sometimes it turns out the little things are the big things.
Yeah. Definitely. I my most favorite parts, along with, you know, playing football or playing in the big games, playing in the Rose Bowl, is just the guys that I've got to be around being here. I've made some of my best friends that I'm going to have for life, and they're some of the most solid guys that will ever be in my life. And what a cool experience to go from a high school where you think you know it all and just be humbled in college. And these guys have had such an impact on my life. I can't even tell you how much I've just learned from my peers here without the academic side of things. So it's been really cool to be part of Spartan Nation.
And we're so proud to have both of you and look forward to your leadership next year. So thanks for being a part of the program.
Thank you.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was Big Ten and Rose Bowl champion Spartan football players Travis Jackson and Mike Sadler talking with MSU Alumni Association Executive Director Scott Westerman and Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Up next, Dr. Kirk Heinze talks with John Allen, who leads Michigan's Office of the Great Lakes. Sundays at 4 o'clock, it's MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. MSU Today is a lively look at MSU-related people, places, events, and attitudes put into focus through conversations by MSU President Simon, Spartans A.D. Hollis, sustainability-focused Dr. Kirk Heinze, and me. MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the program John Allen, the director of the Office of the Great Lakes, which is a key arm of the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. And the Office of the Great Lakes has responsibility to preserve and protect our Great Lakes. John, a pleasure to have you back on the program.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, a year ago, you were recently appointed when you were on the program, and the past year has really been a busy one for you folks, but with a lot of major accomplishments. Looking back over 2013, what do you feel best about?
I think we feel best about some of the work that we're doing both on Michigan's water strategy and reaching out to so many people and understanding what they're passionate about and what they're asking us to do and to manage. I think we've made some significant progress on aquatic invasive species for the state. The state finished its state plan on aquatic invasive species, and really a lot of collaborative work both in the state and in the region. You noticed the governor's summit last summer really starting to harmonize some of those points of view as we work collaboratively towards difficult solutions.
Well, it's the governor has made no secret. In fact, he's been very public about the importance of water. I mean, maybe as more so than maybe any governor since maybe Milliken back in the day. But for him, water is front and center.
It is. It's a big part of our culture. It's a big part of our heritage. It's also a big part of our economy. And it's really a big part of the environment that makes us well and healthy and sustains us. So all those pieces are really critical elements of what water plays in the Great Lakes region and in Michigan.
Well, speaking of one of the issues that's surrounding water, we'll get to the larger invasives in a bit, but the Asian carp situation has been much in the news. Don't need to tell you that. There is an Army Corps report, long awaited, that has just come out that makes some recommendations about how we might deal not only with Asian carp but other invasives. Give us a thumbnail of some of the main points that they came up with in that report.
I can do that fairly quickly, I think. So the Army Corps of Engineers did a technical study. They did not come up with a final recommendation on any one final solution. They laid out a number of options. I think that's one thing to really understand about the report. And the Corps has now said, here are options. Here's sort of the technical pieces. Now it's really up to to a group of actors, both federal and state actors and others, to figure out what the best sets of solutions are within the within that framework, and that's where that work is underway right now. So that said, the Army Corps study laid out everything from sort of doing what you're currently doing, which most of us don't think is enough, all the way through to some very large-scale structure changes in the Chicago River system to block the waterway, essentially the separation studies. So they laid everything out from sort of $68 million solution all the way up to an $18 billion solution. And the hard part is the next piece is going to be to understand those pieces and put together a plan of action. That's what Michigan citizens are asking for, and we're working diligently to put that plan of action together. We have to do that, obviously, with our federal partners and with the other states.
What role will the Army Corps have in putting the action plan together? Is their work basically done?
Well, I don't think it's done. I think the Army Corps now is looking for guidance. They're looking to Congress for guidance, and they're looking, and Congress and others are looking to the states and the regions for guidance on what that overall plan looks like. You have to do that through partnerships, and those discussions are underway. I was just in Chicago on Monday and Tuesday working with the Great Lakes Commission as it looks forward to trying to lay out what the near-term steps are and the long-term steps, and you have to do both. Michigan continues to look for what long-term hydrologic separation looks like. But as you know, the core study says somewhere between 10 to 25 years. That's too long to wait for measures of risk protection, and we have to know what we can do in the short term as well. And I think there's a number of steps that we're going to try to look for that we can do immediately to try to manage some of that risk.
John, you mentioned you were recently in Chicago. We talked to some folks recently from the Alliance for the Great Lakes. This seems to be one of those reports that has been pretty favorably received across all ideology, across political parties, environmental groups, commercial interests, what have you. Has that been your impression as well?
I think the Corps did a great job on the technical difficult work of laying out, you know, what the engineering and what the options are and what different strategies could look like. It's not a political decision-making document. Those are very different things. There are some assumptions in the core report. It, for instance, talks about managing floodwaters to a 500-year storm event. Some other work had used 100-year storm event technical details, but actually details that really drive huge amounts of the cost. So we have to understand some of those technical underpinnings of the discussions, especially when we're talking into the $18 billion range overall. Those are big numbers. So that could be one of the biggest public works projects ever if it ever got to that stage. The Corps will have roles in understanding that, obviously, but there are also a lot of other actors and participants that need to weigh in here.
A couple things on that $18 billion. I mean, we've talked to some people that said that that may be a worst-case scenario number. Another thing, that doesn't that include a lot of infrastructure improvement for the Chicago water system as well?
It's a huge amount. Most of those, you know, the 15, the 8, the big separation proposals deal with really three things, and those drive costs. Flood management in through the – so if you cut off a waterway, if you separate a waterway, then you have to deal with floodwaters, storm events, and where that water goes. It deals, there's a lot of dollars attributable to those plans on water quality within the Chicago system. If you're changing where water's going, Great Lakes or not Great Lakes. So flood management, water quality, actually smaller amounts of those are actually on the physical separation side. And then there's always shipping costs, too. That's a active shipping waterway, and how do you accommodate the movement and commerce of goods through that system? All those are important considerations. We still think the risk of Asian carp in the Great Lakes are huge, and we want to do everything we can, so we have to work through all those pieces.
I'm talking with John Allen, who's the director of the Office of the Great Lakes, which is an arm of the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. Let's talk about some of the other things. Last year when you were on the program, we talked about the White Lake area of concern. Mm-hmm. You've made some progress not only in White Lake, but in some other areas of concern over the past year.
We're seeing great. Thank you.
And areas of concern. Please explain to our
listeners. Yeah, areas of concern were designated that, given that name in the 80s. It really represented some of Michigan's more contaminated sites. Historically, a lot of industrial activity and a lot of activity where contamination had gotten into the sediments. I've often said in speeches and places that The sediments remain the collective memory of the decisions we made in the past. Mm. That's where a lot of pollution went, essentially. Yeah. And those are fairly expensive ways to try to get pollution out, is to go back in and dig them out of our harbors and our rivers. We see that. However, we've made great progress in a number of places. So White Lake was one of those. Had an industrial heritage, had a chemical heritage. And White Lake and the people of White Lake have made great strides in identifying and going after piece at a time sort of the legacy contamination that was in White Lake and in some of those areas. Some of that just involves digging it out, dredging and digging and redoing shoreline and redoing habitat. White Lake has now to the point where we think all the management steps are necessary to delist that site, to take it off the list, are done. The community is in their final discussions and commenting on whether they feel those actions were done and done adequately and done enough. And then the petition process from the department and from the state to the International Joint Commission to ask for delisting is underway right now. I don't want to put the cart before the horse because the community still has to make some final decisions there. But we think White Lake is at the cusp of being the first of the AOCs, these areas of concern, to be delisted. And that's just fabulous news for a community like White Lake.
Absolutely.
And great news for the state of Michigan to show the kinds of progress that we need to take in all of our areas.
Well, the thing that's really impressive, and maybe this has been ongoing, but the community involvement in the process of delisting and addressing these areas of concern, it's not been a top-down effort. It's certainly been a combination of your leadership, but also from the grassroots.
I think this is a hallmark of the program, and this is really people around the state in these areas that have spent 20 and 30 years of their life going to meetings almost monthly, really looking for the kinds of progress. I think some of this progress really accelerated after years of planning and hoping once we really saw the infusion of money from the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, this pool of $300 million that's been coming from the federal government to the whole region, but a fair amount of it's been coming to Michigan to solve these long-term expensive problems. And once we saw this years of planning and community involvement coupled with money to get work done, now we're making stunning progress. Since I've been here, we've been able to take seven more what we call beneficial use impairments off the list. We've delisted seven more beneficial use impairments in a variety of places in Deer Lake up in the UP and in other places around White Lake and other places. And we have four more. So over the year, we've made great progress in many places in Michigan.
Well, a case in point, and was provided a Partridge Creek up in Ishpeming.
Yeah, I mentioned that, part of Deer Lake and Partridge Creek. Back in the 70s, city of Ishpeming had rerouted its stormwater, and in the 70s, to manage its stormwater, had routed its stormwater down into a mine. Unbeknownst at that time, that water flowing through the mine picked up mercury and was the source of maybe 25% of the mercury loads to Deer Lake. So given the restoration money, given the work of the community and the vision of the community, that creek was just reestablished on the surface where the creek should be, and that stormwater and that manned water is now moving through town out to Deer Lake and not picking up mercury. So the source, one of the sources of mercury contamination to Deer Lake, has now been effectively completed. It will be time, obviously, over time for mercury to clear out of Deer Lake, but the source has been attended to. And when we talk about management actions, that's a management action, cutting off the source in this case.
My guest is John Allen, who's the director of the Office of the Great Lakes. John, you mentioned mining, and there's going to be a renaissance in mining in the Upper Peninsula. I'm sure your office is going to be involved, along with the DEQ and the DNR and a lot of other agencies, to make sure that we don't have some of the heritage problems that we had with mining when it first came to Michigan back in the 1800s.
Mining is an important part of Michigan's heritage. Mining is one of the resource industries that Michigan relies on, mining and timber and other things. It has to be done responsibly. It has to be done thoughtfully. A lot of our economy relies on the materials that come from mining, and I think it can be done thoughtfully. I think it can be done in a different way than we had thought about it that created some of these legacy issues. We're seeing that with many of our timber and resource, not just timber, but our resource industries, and the way we go after the use of nature, the use of natural materials, can be done thoughtfully and properly. That takes a lot of people, that takes a lot of process, and that takes a lot of will, but I think Michigan's in a position to do that.
Well, you know, again, what's remarkable about all this, economic development, economic progress, environmental safety, environmental concern don't have to be mutually exclusive. I mean, that's one thing this administration has made very clear, but they're both important.
They're both important. We look at it as the and proposition. We think thoughtfully done, properly done, strategically done, capably done, can be done as an and. That also does take some monitoring. That takes some, we like in the UP, for instance, the community is involved in some of that monitoring. So the community has a sense of how that mining, in this case, or water management is done, and really has a hand in that and has a voice in that. I think those are important sort of bookends on the process.
You know, all that we've been talking about, all these issues related to water, let's take a micro view here for a minute. One of your major responsibilities is to develop a water plan for the state of Michigan going forward for the next two or three decades. Huge task, wonderful opportunity. How's that coming along?
It's coming really well. We've had a lot of conversations around Michigan, a lot of input, and really using some creative strategies, I think, to look at what that input is. I mean, the governor essentially said to us, we have all this water. What's our strategy? Now, that's both a wonderful and daunting challenge. And we're not just looking at Great Lakes. As the Office of Great Lakes, this isn't just about the Great Lakes. This is about the way rain and snowfall comes, the way we manage storm and precipitation, how that flows across the landscape matters. Call it non-point source or stormwater management, both in the urban and rural environments. How it gets into groundwater, how it infiltrates and gets into groundwater, which is a powerful natural resource, but it's also so both for human industry, things like agriculture and irrigation relies heavily on groundwater, but also how groundwater flows into natural streams and how it feeds streams. Our blue ribbon trout streams are highly dependent on groundwater. So how water flows to the system matters. So part of our strategy is really understanding the connection that all these pieces have. These are not discrete or independent entities. Water flows through our system from rainfall all the way throughout to the Great Lakes, and every step of the way matters in how we both use it and how nature relies on it to provide the kind of healthy communities that we really come to rely on.
You know, John, you mentioned this is a daunting task, but also a wonderful opportunity. I was recently out in Orange County, happened to meet with a couple people who sit on the Southern California Regional Water Authority. The problems they're talking about there, I mean, they've got some major issues, and they look at what we have essentially as a wonderful natural bonanza that they can't even begin to approach.
California, we're seeing west in particular, California, they're seeing some great, I mean, large-scale droughts that they haven't seen in a long time. We do have the bounty of water, but that also means we have to treat it with respect. The fact historically that we've always been able to go and get more fresh water has been some of our heritage, but we have to think about how do we reuse that water? How do we take it from the system in a healthy way? How do we put it back in a healthy way? Those matter. Even though we have a lot of water here, we still have to care for it. We still have to tend it. A lot of people want to look at it. I think we have processes in place to do that, to manage it well, but the better stewards we are here, the more opportunities we have to both benefit from it and to have nature benefit from it, the economy benefit from it, and our culture benefit from it. We see that great opportunity, but that comes with great responsibility, too.
I want to thank you, John, for being back on the program. It's always a pleasure to see you. I've been talking with John Allen. He's the director of the Office of the Great Lakes.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
MLive Media Group is a Greening of the Great Lakes partner. To read Kirk's blog and to hear our show archives, please visit mlive.com/environment.
Please find us on Facebook by searching for Greening of the Great Lakes and follow us on Twitter at Green Michigan.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association with another observation from the Spartan Life. One of the things that drives me nuts about Facebook is how people complain about stuff there. Not that I'm against complaining. I actually love it. If there is a solution and the willingness to engage in creating that solution attached to it. It's hard to change the status quo on anything because entrenched organizations are just that, well organized. They have someone in charge and a large infrastructure behind them that is well paid to keep things as they are. They have studied the rules of the game, know their competition,
have plans in place to protect their position. And here's the biggest factor. They are dedicated to the cause. If the past decade has taught us anything, it's that most people are basically comfortably numb, lethargic, and, short of complaining on Facebook, are unwilling to get in the game. Entrenched, well-organized operations count on this. They work harder and longer, knowing that most people won't go the distance to fight to the finish. In a pinch, they will give just enough to defang the opposition. But more likely, they will create a climate of fear, uncertainty, and doubt about change, and spend lots and lots of time and money to protect their position. Affecting change takes time, commitment to the cause, and the willingness to lead. And it's risky. We tend to attack charismatic leaders we don't agree with. Take a strong position and your semi-comfortable existence is in danger. It's easy to become demoralized, intimidated, afraid, and it's very easy to give up. So the majority of us just let it ride. We'll yell at the TV, flame the social media comment sections, maybe even get some friends together for lunch for a group gripe. But we won't do anything meaningful with the intensity and tenacity it takes to effect change. So what's the flip side of all of this? Engage, organize, execute, be willing to take some punches, and keep on keeping on. One of my politician friends tells me, nothing frightens me more than a rational constituent on the other side of my argument. Occasionally there will be something that will so inflame enough people that change occurs, but that's rare. Change, wrote Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., does not roll on the wheels of inevitability, but comes through continuous struggle. And so we must straighten our backs and work for our freedom. A man can't ride you unless your back is bent. Margaret Mead's motivational chestnut has become a cliche, but it's still as valid today as it was when she first said it. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only way that it ever has. The enemy, your competition, the status quo, is counting on the fact that you won't commit to do whatever it takes to get what you want. Will you? I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Doug Bueller leads MSU Ag Bioresearch.
MSU Ag Bioresearch is really located strategically within Michigan State University, and we concentrate on research in agriculture, natural resources, and energy.
MSU Ag Bioresearch is changing the face of science.
Our mission really is wise use of the resources, both human and natural resources, and also to protect the productivity and profitability of our natural resource and agricultural systems.
More than 300 scientists from six MSU colleges are leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
Well, I think the most important thing we do is to continue to try to develop production systems that can put safe food on our plates, but also protect the environment and also a situation where the producers can make a good living and protect their resources at the same time.
MSU Ag Bioresearch, leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.